A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Yo, son!
One app is life.
It's not the one you should be underestimating.
Sasquatch, Godzilla, King Kong, Loch Ness.
We rap nerd now here, right?
Like, I can tell you were a nerd.
It's primal.
And that's raw.
Carhartt girl.
Speaking of sneaky big tits,
are you out there fucking?
I'm doing that.
Years ago, I bought a millionaire Griffin. This was years ago, bro. Years ago.
Cypher Sounds. Peter Rosenberg. One app is life.
Good morning.
Good afternoon.
Good night.
No.
Oh.
You skipped one. Jesus Christ.
You skipped two, actually.
Yo, I just got to this. You know, I'm new with the one apps.
Right.
Okay. Sorry.
All right, here we go. Good morning.
Good afternoon.
Good evening.
And good night.
Oh, shit.
It's the whole day.
I get it, brother.
And sometimes fourth meal. You know, depending.
We do a fourth
when we get that Taco Bell sponsorship, we're going to bring back the fourth meal. You guys didn't think it would happen, but because DJ Enough is the greatest person in the world, he came back literally a week later to sit with us again.
Part two
is
also
happening.
It's making me question your decision making process.
Right.
Because after the first time, I don't know why you came back.
No. The best part about that is E was early the first time,
yeah,
and we weren't ready for dick. Because it was the first day.
First time we ever used a studio.
First time we've ever used a studio. And my guess is within 2 months, it won't even look like this studio anymore. But we're working on it.
Yeah.
Comes back for week two. He's early again. He's that professional. Although it was more in order this time. This was faster than last
100%.
Time. Last time we were practically building the studio.
Yeah.
It actually already looks a little more professional setup wise than it did last time.
Why don't you give credit to who did it?
Oh, you mean Miss Hatton?
Of course.
Thanks, Natalie.
Of course.
Natalie's helping us.
Put the camera,
and Billy June.
Poor Billy. Boy, Billy's like, where's my credit?
Yeah, you too, Billy June.
Put the camera under the table and show how I cleaned up the wire.
Syfy and wires.
It's going to be way better, trust me.
No. Syfy cares a lot about wires.
I got zip ties in the bag.
What, are you planning on kidnapping?
I got zip ties. It's going to look nice.
Enough. The feedback was amazing. I hope you saw some of it too, but people are loving the part one. And so we're thrilled to have you back for part two.
I'm excited to be here, guys. Let's do it.
One thing that someone pointed out actually, a Juan Epper said in the Discord. So they're a patron actually, our most special listeners. Cause if you go to patreon.com/JuanEppersLife, you become a patron. You can communicate with us during the
directly,
Discord.
Yeah.
So anyways, someone pointed out though, don't forget that when Enough did the Get Money remix.
With Jiv.
With Jiv. Yes.
Got to make sure Jiv gets his credit.
No, you guys co-produced it.
100%.
So you and Jiv produced that. That sample ended up being what Tupac used for Hit 'Em Up.
Yeah, it broke my heart.
Yeah, that must have been a crazy feeling.
I didn't forget that. I just didn't connect it.
Yeah.
You know how that felt? We were on the road. And we were literally in Texas.
Yeah.
We were doing a show with the Ghetto Boys, or maybe it was Ice Cube and Mr. Scarface. Mm-hmm. Anyway, one of the Texas groups.
Yeah.
And after we finish our show, we're leaving the arena and everyone's bumping.
Hit 'Em Up.
That's the first time I heard it.
Yeah.
Remember, there's no Spotify.
I know.
Again,
There's YouTube.
That's it.
The street was YouTube.
There's like 64 Chevy Impalas convertibles with banging sound systems
playing,
and Candy Pate playing Hit 'Em Up.
Wow.
Outside the arena. And it's like, oh shit. This is crazy.
Do you listen to Hit 'Em Up? Do you play Hit 'Em Up out?
I never in my life played Hit 'Em Up one time.
Really?
Not one time.
I was going
to
say,
I kept the loyalty to my guy even after he died.
You can never play Hit 'Em Up, even in Jersey.
Nah, never.
Because you know Jersey loves Pac, like
100%.
To a different level.
And you'll play
other Pac songs.
100%. I got my favorite Pac song.
Any other Pac diss songs?
No, just the one Hit 'Em Up is not happening.
It's not happening.
You'll play other songs though where they might be a mention.
Yeah, but the Hit 'Em Up was too much.
Just Hit 'Em Up.
I got to tell you, Syph, this may sound incredibly nerdy as someone who never even met Biggie. I've never played it.
I've played it.
I love you for that.
Thing. I've never played it. It's too much. But it's too far.
You know what's funny? I never played it until I saw Doo-Wop play it.
Oh, don't blame Doo-Wop. Why don't you?
I've noticed you have a lot of Doo-Wop.
I love Doo-Wop, bro.
I know. I get it.
He's one of my favorite DJs.
Yeah.
A lot of my style is, I'm not going to say based on him, but inspired by him. But he played Hit 'Em Up in Speed. He was like, I got to play this. But also, he talked his shit over it. And then he would play Who Shot You right after.
Okay.
Got it. Okay.
Which,
understood.
Also, I don't love that street mentality either, because violence begets violence. But I saw his theatrics of the way he did it.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever hear Biggie talk about Hit 'Em Up?
No. Never.
How was Biggie always so sort of lighthearted? He really, to me, always seemed to want to play it down. Like, even when he said, if Faith had twins, she'd probably have two Pacs.
Get it?
He's taking a really serious thing that someone said that most people really would go crazy over. And he's kind of just like flipping it on its head and making it. Was that his nature?
That was kind of him. Biggie came from a rough side of town, and it's either we pulling guns out or I'm going to laugh this off. Look what Faith did. Faith did the same thing. She laughed it off. You get to a certain point, what are you going to do but laugh it off?
I think one of the better one eps of all time, the late great Prodigy, told us that he straight laughed off the ballerina, the entire Jay-Z. Mm-hmm. He wasn't joking. He really openly laughed in front of us. He was like, that shit was funny. He was like, hey, my grandmother made a lot of money. That was her business.
His grandmother was famous.
He was like, but the picture's funny.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say it's not funny.
But real quick, I just want to touch on what you were just saying. I don't know if anyone knows this. I used to DJ for Lil' Kim.
Oh my goodness.
So how I was introduced to Tupac and Machiavelli was through Lil C's. When the Machiavelli came out, he's dissing you in this song. He's like, yeah, but the music fired him. And then we go do a show in Florida on a native reservation, the Seminoles, right? The show was 2 days later, but we had to go early because Kim was coming from somewhere else. So we're in a janky motel on the reservation or some shit. And people knew we were there, and they were driving pickup trucks, circling the hotel, bumping the new Machiavelli album, and just circling. And I was like, yo, what's good? And they're like,
people love that.
Yeah, they're like, they always do that. They always do that. They always like play Tupac around us, try to like, it was crazy.
But you know what? That makes sense. People would do that. That's like trolling.
It's literally live trolling.
That's live trolling. You said it.
Live trolling.
You said it, my brother.
All right. So, E, we left off after Biggie's passing and getting into the late 90s. But one part that I guess is right around that time, you tell me the timeline, that we hinted to, that we have to get to, is the formation of the Pitbulls. And then what then led to the creation of the Heavy Hitters. Syph, don't tighten up. Syph, don't get tight. Don't let your pitbull energy get weird.
I should have brought my 5X leather jacket. A pitbull leather jacket.
We talked about it briefly, and I started one by one hearing new members getting down with the Big Dog Pitbulls.
Okay, and this was coming out of the Flip Squad. Like, so Flip Squad's done at this point?
Flip Squad's done at this point. You know, we just dropped the album, and then after the album was done. I remember that specifically, because I know I left
the Flip Squad album.
Yeah, remember the Flip Squad All-Star?
I forgot about that.
Flip Squad album.
We put an album.
Forgot about that. What was the big single?
It was no big single.
What was the attempt at a big single?
It was Mark Ronson, I think.
Maybe.
Mark Ronson was in the Flip Squad for a minute.
He was on it. No, he said that. Last week.
You know who we forgot about mentioning?
Who?
Oh, we forgot Mr. C. In the first part, we did not mention Mr. C as part of the Flip Squad DJ.
Well, I got to tell you something. You two are
apologize, Mr. C.
I always picture C as in coming into the Pitbulls.
Yeah, but
I forgot he was with us.
He was a squad DJ too.
There we go.
Paul Flex.
Was this on the album? This is a couple years before. But it's the beginning. This is Nervous, but it was Flip Squad. It was Funkmaster Flex presents the Flip Squad.
That was his early.
It said Flip Squad on there?
I believe it, yeah.
No, that. They might have took that record and licensed it and put it on there. That was the original record didn't say Flip Squad. The Nervous Records.
Yeah.
I don't think it said Flip Squad.
I think it did. I had it.
Where's pull it up?
I don't remember that.
We got the Google.
So what was on the Flip Squad album?
Trash. But that's where I met True Life. Because True Life was down with Mark Ronson, the ghetto inmates.
We could call Mark right now, you know what I'd say?
True Life.
He'd be like, well, you know, when we did that Flip Squad album.
It was the beginning of me getting some equipment, you know?
Yo, I did the real version, which is a touch of it. I like that you went
full. Well, it depends where he is. When
it's
he's
me,
here.
Mark Ronson, yeah? I'm here with me mates, DJ Enough and Cypher Sounds, yeah?
Yo, sidebar. Mark Ronson's series about sound, like the studios and how the sound, oh my God, I think it's on, is it on Apple or Amazon? Phenomenal, bro.
Really? Yo, yeah,
like
I watched like two episodes. It's pretty good.
You gotta watch it. He talks about the premiere and fuck.
I watched the premiere one. It was fire.
Anyway.
Okay, so Flip Squad ends. Flex starts.
I'm trying to avoid this conversation.
I know. Exactly. Flex starts the Pitbulls, and you start hearing one name. He's Cypher Sound's going to be in there.
I made up the names.
You came up with a name?
Cypher's already on.
I invented Big Dog Pitbulls.
I think Riz is on, right?
No.
No? He didn't make it?
No.
I forgot who the original Big Dog Pitbulls
me,
were.
Me, Big Cat.
Right.
You guys were 1 and 2, the first two draft picks?
Probably.
Oh, I was third on the call sheet, baby.
Okay.
Funkmaster Flex. Listen to Annie Up album version.
Yeah.
Funkmaster Flex, Big Cap.
Cypher Sounds, yeah.
I'm third roster. Third, what's that in basketball? I'm the point guard? Where am I?
Whatever.
You're the small forward.
So that happens. And then one day at the station, I approach Flex. I'm like, yo, what's happening with this Big Dog Pitbulls? I'm waiting for my invitation. Mm. And he's like, well, I don't know enough, you know, to be honest with you. The Flip Squad thing was more of a Jessica thing, and I needed something to be my thing. You know, my guys, my whatever, whatever. So I was like, all right. You know how bummed I was, bro?
I can tell by your face right now that you were very bummed.
I was so fucking bummed.
Nah, it couldn't be, though.
Yo, I was bummed, bro.
But how could you have done it?
You
couldn't have done it.
Why?
You're going to be what? Number two? Number three?
I don't know. I was just
happy. Oh, you mean he was too big?
I was just...
You were too big.
Yeah, but I didn't see that. Remember?
Right.
I mean, at the time, but you saw it, but I didn't see that. I'm just happy to be down with you guys on the radio.
Wow.
I'm
like,
what the fuck? I'm not part of the cool kids.
That's so
I remember. Program. I can't have ham and cheese sandwiches with you guys.
We're skipping over a part. Because the reason why Flip Squad disbanded is because Flip Squad was all managed by Jessica. And when Flex and Jessica had a split...
Right.
They couldn't keep the Flip Squad. He had to differentiate the groups or whatever. We were in Flex in the Hot 97 studio, and Tracy comes in and she's like, I got to talk to you guys, meaning him. I'm just there. I'm the intern. I'm probably ordering sandwiches. And she was like, I'm thinking about getting this guy DJ Enough. It's Biggie's DJ.
Right.
Right. And I saw Flex have a moment. All I can assume is when Flex left being under Red's camp or whatever on Kiss and started doing his own thing at Hot, Enough took his slot. And then
me and Flex had tension for many years.
So Flex so is now moving
here comes,
up.
So now here comes
Flex is moving up and Enough is always one step behind. But now Flex's boss, who's like this with Flex, is saying, hey, I'm gonna bring a guy in that's gonna be on the primetime slot. Like you're the night primetime, he'll be the morning or
Originally, morning.
Come the so that's like even more listeners. Morning gets the most listeners. So I could see Flex calculate. He never said any of this, but I could just see his calculations. Like he was under me. Now he's, you know what I mean.
And so you think that's part. You think the reason that E didn't get the nod is that it wouldn't have made sense for Flex in his eyes to be like, hey, you want to be
Co-president? You're going to be co-president of the Pitbulls?
No, I get it.
But now you get it.
Now I get
now
it.
Now you're, yeah. You know what I mean? Like back then it's probably like.
By the way, there's no way at the time anyone would get, it was actually kind of out of respect that he's like, A, respect and a healthy dose of competitiveness of like, I'm not sharing the slot with you and I can't try to sun you and make you under me either.
Right.
So I'm just going to leave you
but
out.
I can't sun you because you've moved up in the ranks. My boss loves you. So how can I sun you? Because that's going to put me in a bad position with my boss. Flex is always fucking.
No, what this is.
What's that shit? He's Abacus, man.
Always. Flex. Flex is like fucking, what's his face? His character in House of Cards.
Oh, his side, his yeah. Right-hand man, Roger or Ron or something.
He's the dude who's just always thinking about the moves three, four steps down the road. It's something I'm not very good at. So you were bummed out by this, though?
Super bummed out.
Damn. Did you tell him? Did you say anything? Or you just like,
No, I was like, fuck. And I just left.
Wait, why'd you have the tension with him all those years, you said?
Because I think we both come under Red Alert. And it was like, who's going to represent Red Alert the best and better? And who's more proud of... You know,
their red alertness.
Yeah, man. That was
and
it.
Like, was it like so, club? Like, did
it
you
was
ever
clubs.
Get-
it was radio, everything. And it was actually it was radio first because really? When I was on Kiss.
On Kiss.
Bumba, I was on at 10 p.m. And then Flex was on at 10 p.m.
Oh, like if Red was out of town.
Yeah. So no. At this time, I have my own show now.
Oh.
You know, so now I'm DJ enough. I got my own show. I'm on
right.
10 p.m.
You're on against
I'm
him.
On Wednesdays. Oh, this is- He's on the same time. Yeah. So you know how it is naturally. Just yeah. It's competitive. So... I didn't hear it until years later, but Flex would be like, yo, when you was playing them breakbeats, you got me with this one, you got me with that
one. Yeah, yeah.
He wouldn't give it up until years later. Right. But he had a great time just being competitive. We're on the radio, but we're also monitoring what the other stations are doing.
Bro, he had a plan. He had a boombox.
I know.
Yeah. But that was in the studio.
That was his thing. Like, you had to listen to what the other competition was playing. So right. That way, either we're early or late or... They're going to commercials or whatever it was. It
right.
Was,
they're going was, soft. Let's go hard.
Yeah, exactly. When you go to commercials, we play the biggest hit.
Yeah, whatever. To try to keep them. That was his thing. But he says that you was just always so competitive. And he just enjoyed the competitiveness. But I think it was the industry, too, talking crap. Mm-hmm. You know, Flex is this. Enough is that.
Yep.
So after a while, you're rolling with that so much, you really believe, like, yo, this guy don't fuck with me. So now we got beef, kind of. Like, right. I thought we were going to fight one time.
You did?
Yeah.
Like Angie and Wendy?
Yeah, almost like that. But not at the station. There was one time, remember Thais Harris at Columbia?
Yep.
She used to work at Columbia. Mm-hmm. And she was trying to, like, be the middle person. And was like, you know, you and Flex got to work it out.
Yeah.
This tension between y'all is stupid. And I was like, all right, whatever. But it was tough. So then I vent, and I'm cursing one day, and DJ Threat. Is my Cypher Sounds now at the time.
Okay.
DJ Threat.
DJ Threat is from Long Island, half Dominican, half Irish.
Threat was my threat.
Yeah. So Threat.
Threat was your threat?
Bro.
That was the guy, right?
Yo, Threat. I used like, Threat came in under Enough and like, that's like.
So he was your equivalent.
And I was like, damn, this guy's nice, man. Yeah, he was good. Nice. But how did Threat die?
Motorcycle accident.
Oh, motorcycle accident. Yeah.
Yeah, he was on a motorcycle going to the store to buy his mom a Mother's Day card. And an elder gentleman cut him off or something and died.
This turned into a reflection episode.
Here we go.
I hate this. This taught me a lesson about life because I used to be jealous of Threat.
Why?
Because he was you. He was me in a way, but like, it's not true because I was getting a lot of stuff. But I always, you know, that's when I used to look at other people and get jealous. He was getting more stuff than me. He was doing more clubs than me.
Yeah.
He was popping. And then he got killed and he died.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh no, I had bad feelings. So, I mean, we were always cool.
Of course.
But like, I don't know if it's like competition or whatever. And I remember when he died, I was like, oh no, like I had a negative feeling towards a person. He's no longer here. And that's, I don't do that anymore, bro. I always think of like, I literally say this, and this is dark. I say, I'm about to beef with somebody. I go, what if that person dies tomorrow?
That's not dark. That's fucking, that's actually, in my therapy through my, all of my divorce, I was divorced. I don't know if you know that. Yeah,
what?
It's true. I was. By the way, divorce is my little Kim thing, by the way. So
let it go, Rose.
Okay. So through my therapy and that though, one thing that came along was, praying for my therapist telling me, to pray for the people that I had problems with.
Wait, are you in a religious therapist?
No, but he is a religious guy. So he's a Catholic.
Right.
He's a pretty religious Catholic guy. But we don't do like religious shit. But prayer is the thing that comes up. So like prayer as a tool for your health.
Right.
So he'll be like, literally, I was having a problem. I don't know, an industry problem. Yeah. Like it was like a work thing. It was like fucking Charlemagne or someone. Right. I don't know who it was. And he was like, have you tried praying for him? And I was like,
pray for his downfall? Absolutely.
I was like, yeah, of course I do. You ever heard the song by Biggie? No, so, but I tried it. It actually is a very useful tool. So what you're doing is basically that.
Yeah.
You're thinking, instead of thinking about this beef, you're thinking about their humanity. Like, wait a second.
Yeah.
And the truth is, with most of the people that we don't fuck with, and that wasn't even someone you didn't fuck with. That was just someone you felt a little jealousy towards.
Jealous, yeah.
Which in the social media era is everywhere.
Oh my God.
Like I could feel it toward, there are people who I love and who are lower on the totem pole than me. And I still get jealous of them because of the way social media makes you feel.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's fucking wild.
So the crazy thing about Threat, if you guys didn't know, Threat was working alongside Jadakiss and the Rough Riders. And then that Monday, he died on Mother's Day on a Sunday. That Monday, he was supposed to report to work at Atlantic Records.
Mm.
And the job that Rick Betterman ended up getting was the job that Threat was supposed to have.
Wow.
And he was under Crystal Isaacs. Remember Crystal Isaacs?
I remember Crystal. Yeah.
So that was his job.
Damn.
Anyway.
I remember hearing
he got to live his died. He got to live his dream. You know, he was on part of the Saturday night crew, that 12 to 4 slot. They would rotate them.
Rotate DJs, you know,
whatever. So he got to do that with Green Lantern, K-Slay.
Yeah.
And I'm missing one more DJ. Might have been Camilo. I think all four of them or something like that.
Maybe rotating. Ben, Big Ben.
Yeah, something like that. But they were rotating the guys on the weekend. So he was happy to live his dream and he got to do his thing. And that was that. So I told him and I vented. I said, you know what? So he was like, man, fuck Flex. Let's start our own shit. I'm like, yeah, what are we going to do? He was like, yo, you the heavy hitter DJ enough, right? So we gonna start a crew called the Heavy Hitters.
That's crazy.
And I'm like, I said, who are we gonna put down?
Well, you were already calling yourself the Heavy Hitter?
Yeah.
Okay. Who came up with that?
Me.
Just you? Okay.
Because I did a mixtape called The Heavyweight Champion of Sound. But I couldn't call myself the Heavyweight Champion of Sound all the time.
No, it doesn't play well in the long term.
So I just kept with the Heavy Hitter, and that was the vibe. I'm having this conversation with DJ Threat in the street. Around 30-something street, right? Matter of fact, right around here, but probably on the east side.
Okay.
And then like, who are we going to put down? And then walking around the corner is this young Colombian Queens DJ named DJ Camilo.
Was he already hot out here?
He was already kind of moving. You know, he was doing like Casablanca and Queens.
Oh, he's local though.
Doing a bunch of spots.
DJ with the Beatnuts.
Yeah.
Oh, he did? But he wasn't yet the International Club King.
Not yet.
Okay. We're years away from the International Club King.
Camilo's the first one to take me to Germany.
I love that.
Wow.
We'll see ya.
See ya, yep.
All right, see?
See ya, yep.
I hated him back then.
Why?
He played me, see ya.
Oh, we'll get into that.
We'll get into it later. It's a fun joke. Now I don't care. It's all love. But anyway, so this young kid, Camilo, yo, we starting this DJ crew. You want to be down with us? And then Camilo goes, sure. Why not? But it's just like, that's it.
Yeah.
So then me, Camilo, DJ Threat, the foundation now. Mm-hmm. So then in our head, we're like, what is going to make a heavy hitter? What do we need from a disc jockey for them to be considered a heavy hitter? Mm-hmm. So we went to our banks and we're thinking like, they got to either be a producer, a big dude in the club, a mixtape king of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
You got to do something. Or they got to DJ for an incredible rap group or like
right.
band or artist or something. Those were kind of like the credentials needed to be down with.
I respect it.
That's how we did it all the way into the last couple of years.
And
we kind of shied away from that because things have changed. Nobody makes mixtapes no more.
Right. You had to change the standards
now.
You
had to change the standards.
Who?
It's like those biker gangs that now kind of let Mexicans and blacks in.
So wait, how long into the process did the heavy hitter sucker drop come to be?
Well, that's Camilo's wife.
Oh, so
Camilo's
so
wife Chef was T. the first one.
Well, she made that for him.
She made it for him.
And it became.
I heard it.
Yeah.
And I stole it.
Yeah.
And then since I'm on every day in the primetime slots, it became famous. And then what I told every DJ was, I said, you know what? Everybody wears colors. Everybody wears jackets. Everybody wears t-shirts. I don't give a fuck. Grab this sound bite and play it.
Yeah.
And everybody will know who we are.
And you fucking nailed it.
And to be honest with you, I got that from DJ Clue. Because remember, right. Clue's doing mixtapes, and all he did was Clue. And I heard that damn Clue echo everywhere. So I was like, we gotta do that.
And it's dope. It plays cool too, because like I could be listening to Shade 45, or I could be in LA listening to the radio. And when you hear the heavy hitter sucker drop, cool. You're like, oh, this person's official. Yeah. It really works. Cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's fucking great.
Yeah. It's crazy because like Flex had the bomb that everyone knows, mm-hmm. but it was only his.
Right.
And it didn't say anything.
Flex never made a true big dog pit bull drop.
No, because the fuck are we?
Right. he had Funkmaster Flex Night, which was huge, obviously.
That was the sounder.
Bro, I saw that live, bro.
You watched it happen?
Rosie Perez.
David Letterman. Yeah. Rosie, and I remember I used to love like David Letterman. I would stay up late and I saw her say that live. I didn't know Flex at the time, but I was just like, oh, that's I knew from the radio. And I'm like, that's crazy. She just gave this guy
Hard to get a ticket for Funkmaster Flex Night.
I was going to the Palladium on Funkmaster Flex Night. You know that night?
Oh, yeah. So, Master Flex Night. Oh,
yeah, it's cool.
Hard to get a ticket for Funkmaster Flex Night.
By the way, do you hear, though, that when she says it, the crowd there reacts?
Yes.
Wait, listen to the beginning. The crowd, it's Letterman's in New York.
Yeah.
There's a response when she says it.
I was going to the Palladium on Funkmaster Flex Night. You know that night?
Oh, yeah.
You don't hear that? Funkmaster
Flex Night.
No, that's somebody laughing.
Somebody laughing.
You think so?
They don't know what that. There's a tourist in there.
Oh, sorry.
I hope
that one person was in there.
They're laughing at what the fuck is she saying?
What is a Funkmaster Flex
Night? A Funkmaster Flex Night?
Yo, he flipped that so crazy. Yeah,
Chris Mercado.
No, he did. Shout out to Chris Mercado.
It was Chris Mercado who did it?
You know, remember him? He used to work at the station.
Yeah, yeah.
He did that.
He did imaging, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I used to wonder, I'd go, how the fuck did Flex, how did this guy get a drop from David Letterman?
That's
and now you know. All right, so the heavy hitter sucker drops, pops off. Mm-hmm. You guys start building your.
We start building our army.
And the early ones are you, Threat, Camillo. Who was next in that we would know?
Probably like DP1.
Okay.
DP1.
DJ Lobo was my first like real Hispanic disc jockey.
Okay.
Because I was doing a very famous club in the Bronx called Jimmy's Bronx Cafe.
Of course.
And at that party is where everything happened. You know, a lot of things happened.
We've heard the stories.
Okay.
Many stories.
But so he was there. Then a guy named Precise. Then the list goes on. Then DJ Ramo. And then it was Big Ben, Cass One, L Boogs.
So now
it's like, turns. So it's like, wow, it's a lot happening. But you know what? It was crazy. Then I got, in the very beginning, I got a lot of flack from the industry. You got nothing but Spanish DJs. I said, bro, at the time when I was doing this, the Spanish clubs were the hottest clubs in the city.
Right.
And this is no disrespect to nobody. It had nothing to do with me picking black, white, Spanish. It just who I felt who moved the rooms the best. Mm-hmm. And remember the accolades we talked about? They mm-hmm. needed to be who.
But there was nothing about Latin pride or anything, even a piece of it?
A little bit, of course.
But that just
felt good.
That's like, a New York thing, though.
Of course. Like,
it's not, we're not separated.
No.
But yeah, but there is a cool little vibe of like, mm-hmm. there was a lot of Spanish DJs, but yeah, they were Spanish clubs at that time.
Was Rock Raider a heavy hitter?
Yes. See, Rock Raider, I met through Sean C and Fat Fingers, right? All he came to me and said was, I need a little bit of help, bro. I said, what's up? He goes, I'm this world famous DJ, you know that, blah, 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 blah. But nobody wanted to book him to do a party.
Parties.
And he could do that too.
And he could do that.
Right.
He was amazing.
Right.
But they were
just thinking of the scratch.
They labeled him a technical disc jockey nerd.
Turntablist,
yeah. And that's it. My plan was to slowly work him in the club circuit and then maybe get him on the radio a few times and show the world that he can DJ and party rock just like we could.
Yeah, like he's from the place where all the party rock DJs are from.
Right, he was just so nice technically.
And I thought, well, he went technical first.
And so real talk, I thought he was bugging, trying to be down with the heavy hitters. I'm like, yo, do you understand who you are and who you just like?
Nah, I get it though.
You're part of the executioners, bro. Right. You're bugging. But he really wanted that. And then the last conversation I had with him, I saw him. He was DJing for Busta. And I saw him at a concert somewhere upstate, maybe Albany or Chicago somewhere. I'm sorry, my brain's losing it. And then he passed away.
So So it didn't even last that long.
It didn't get to happen. No,
it didn't even really. So he is a member, and you guys put him on the jackets and stuff, and yes, you honor
100%.
But it never really.
It didn't really resonate the way we wanted it to do.
He's one of the greatest of all time.
100%.
Who do you think is the just quick aside? Who do you think is the greatest technical DJ of all time? Like someone who you just go, oh my god.
What do you mean, like cuts?
Overall, they like blow your mind the most as a DJ.
How can you? There's so many.
I know.
Many
I would still say Jazzy Jeff to me.
But
you know why? Because Jazzy has that. He has the technical side of it. He has the party rocking side of it, and he gets the music. So to me, probably hands down, Jazzy.
I say Jazzy Jeff too.
When random people say, "Oh, you can't scratch in a club. Girls don't like that. You can't dance to that." Then you go see Jazzy Jeff.
And then everything changes.
But the thing is, he scratches with melody.
Of course.
It's part of the rhythm. Like, yeah, nobody wants to see you doing fucking... Well, maybe if you do it right, but some people scratch like it's too aggressive. Jazzy Jeff puts the fucking groove in it. Yeah.
He scratches in pocket.
My dream...
Pocket.
I'm going to say this to the camera. My dream scenario is that the next person to sit in the seat that DJ Nuff is in is Jazzy Jeff. He's been on like my list forever for us to get.
But there's other local people we can get. Don't.
Well, I'm not trying to diss the. So what? It's only 2 hours away.
What do you mean next?
I want him immediately.
Well, you got to get on your booking shit then.
I know. I hit up Jazzy Jeff the other day because I showed Natalie the summertime video for the first time. And I was like, yo, do you still have any of those starter jerseys from back in the day? He was like, bro, you have no idea how many I had of those.
Oh, my God.
And they're all gone. I was like,
man, that sucks.
Yeah, but I'm with you. I agree, Jeff. All right. So Heavy Hitters pops off. And at what point does a young Mr. West, Kanye West, want to get down with the Heavy Hitters? How did that all come to be?
Okay. So at this time, my management office is located on 38th Street.
Okay. 38th and what?
Between 8th and 9th.
Who's it? Who's your manager?
Renee McLean.
Okay, that's what I thought.
It's RPM, him and Lilette Pizarro. They're, you know, I don't know if they're boyfriend or girlfriend or husband or wife at the time, but he's the creator of the Mix Show Power Summit, which is one of those big conventions.
Puerto Rico with the DJs.
Yeah.
Puerto Rico. Let me just put it this way. I'll sum it up like this. A lot of promo 12 inches and a lot of DJs getting their dick sucked.
Wait, I was talking about the line. From the Jay-Z and Kanye.
Oh, no, I know you were. But I'm just saying, I'm just talking about conferences in general.
Yeah, okay. So Ye was around all that, the conferences, and then one day.
Just trying to get his records like out there?
No, not yet. This is early. He was just making beats. He's the producer. He can rap, but no one's heard his raps yet. So I'm tight with Talib and Mos Def at this time. This is around the time Fat Beats was still rocking. And I remember specifically having an argument with the fans of Fat Beats. I was so mad because. And Tyler called me to check up on me because I had his back. Because I'm a new DJ getting ready to get hired on Hot 97, right? They dropped this Black Star project, so I can't wait to play it on Hot 97. But everybody in the store is like, nah, fuck Hot 97. We don't want to hear Black Star on Hot 97. And this is a true thing.
This shit happened to me.
This is around the OK Player
OK
era.
Player, yeah, yeah. Okay? This the beginning of the internet era, really.
100%. Yeah. So I'm arguing with all these people in Fat Beats, like, fuck y'all. These are your artists right here that you fucking love. And if I go on the radio and play them and support
them, exposure.
You're not going to fucking fuck with them?
Yeah.
You guys, this is bullshit. I never went back into Fat Beats again after
that. Wow.
I was so mad.
I believe you.
So fucking mad.
That's crazy because I would have thought that someone like one of you guys walking into Fat Beats, people would be excited to see you there. Like, oh, you're here to buy good, you're going to support good shit.
No, we could actually, me and Syfe come from that.
I know.
We actually come from that. We were playing like Necro Flow.
I met Camilo in Fat Beats.
And Fat Beats. That was the thing.
That's how I know Camilo. Fat Beats
was located on 8th Street by Grace Papaya.
No, I was there. I was there.
So that was where we went. We went there. You know, I mean, besides Rock and Soul and
let me tell you,
spots. But
I love Rock and Soul. Let me tell you that, by the way, as an out-of-towner going to Fat Beats.
Yeah.
Because, you know, my parents were taking me. The level of dickheadedness. it's like a fucking parody of the movie of the fucking Q-Sav High Fidelity. I mean, you ask, hey, where's the new J Live record? It's over there, dipshit.
Yeah, shut the fuck up.
No, we sold out of the J Live record, you fucking moron.
We don't even have no more. And they're not coming in for a while.
Yeah, they're not coming in. Good luck. And I'm like, no, I just see one right here. They're like, oh, okay, sorry.
You are absolutely right. So that's the tension I was dealing with. Supporting.
I prefer Discorama where you didn't have to talk to anyone.
Support Black Star, right?
Okay.
And then this is the time I'm still taking the train to and from the station. Me and fucking Mos Def or Yasiin Bey now used to take the train to Brooklyn.
Crazy.
So a couple of years later, maybe 2 or 3 years later, Talib's like, yo, I want to introduce you to Kanye. I'm like, who else Kanye? Producer dude. I'm like, all right, cool. What's up with him? Oh, he's trying to get his shit on. We helping him with his raps and stuff. I'm like, all right, cool. So what I didn't realize was that he's recording College Dropout down the block from the RPM offices.
Okay.
Because they're both located on 38th Street. All right. So he would probably just do his recording and then come to the office and nag me. And the nagging was always, yo, I know you got this heavy hitter thing. I want to be down. I'm like, we don't have artists down. Yeah, this is a DJ crew, bro. In my mind, like, you don't fit. This is not what we're doing.
By the way, I'm noticing a problem with DJ Enough's with the way of thinking in general.
What?
You short sell yourself on everything. You're like, no, why would you want to be down with us? Yeah. Instead of thinking, but no, at the time there wasn't
because
a reason.
Because I'm humble, bro.
This no, you're humble. And also
humble beginnings.
And also it was the beginning for him. You didn't know.
I had no idea who the hell.
I wouldn't have wanted to put a random artist in my fucking DJ crew either. No, I get it.
And I like Talib, but I'm, you guys are underground. You guys haven't even seen what's happening with my space. And
they're not even asking to be in your crew. So why would.
That's why it was weird to me.
Right. That is. By the way, let's just be honest. It is weird.
If I was going to put a rapper artist down, I already know Mos and Quali. They'd have to go before you.
Right.
Because I met them through, you through them.
But I just think it's important that there's so much conversation about Kanye these days. And a lot of people say, like, what happened? And obviously talking about the political and all that crazy shit is different. But in terms of the behavioral weirdness.
He changed twice for me.
But just to be point out, even from the very beginning, this behavior is a little weird. Like, that is a very forward way to be.
100%.
I want to be in your DJ crew. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about? All right, so
maybe he understood what that meant. Maybe he didn't. Whatever. Maybe he was smart. Whatever. But
it's all that.
But that was happening all the time.
All the time.
And then, I mean.
He would just go down to your office.
All the time. Renee was like, yo, what's this dude's always coming to the office, man? All the time looking for you.
I mean, what's
his problem, bro?
All the hot DJs are next door. Why wouldn't I go down there?
I know, man. It was just nuts. And then when I think about it today, I had Common, Mos Def, Talib Kweli, and Kanye West knocking on my fucking management's door every day. And I don't know why every day. So it was years later that I put it together because I did a party recently at this studio location and the owner of the location of the studio was like, this is where Kanye did his first album. I said, this is where he did it? So I'm like, oh, shit. So I go to the studio, check out. I'm like, look where it's located. It's down the block from the office. So now I get it. He reported to work to record his album, but he was just trying to figure out a way to get it heard and get it supported.
And do you look back now and think like what you could have done considering everyone was banging down the door?
I could have been G and Hop, could have signed him, could have managed him, could have fucking did all that. But I didn't have my business together back then and I was still trying to be DJ Enough.
And that would have been a lot also.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Now, so what happened? So he just keeps nagging and you're like, no, I'm good?
Then one day he says, look, do me a favor, man. Just help me with this thing. I'm trying to go into a different space. He gives me a snippet of his album. And he's like, let's put it out as a mixtape. Put your logo on it. Let's put it out on a mixtape. I think it's to get home.
The whole album?
Yeah.
No, song.
But it's like snippets.
Okay.
He put together a mixtape for himself.
Right.
And he wanted me to help him distribute it.
Got it.
Put it out. So shout to AG. AG that rolls with Trey Songz. I don't know if you remember him. Well, anyway, AG literally went to physically all the stores in Harlem, Brooklyn, Queens, and put out the Kanye West mixtape.
So what was it? What was it called? College Dropout mix? Like,
no, it was called the Get Well. Remember, he got in the car accident, so it was the Get Well
Soon.
Soon mixtape. That's it. Let's
hear what the beginning sounds like.
We want to send a Get Well shout out to music producer Kanye West. He's doing fine, but he was in a car accident last week. So we just want to send him our best from over here.
That's free for all of y'all.
Free. He gets better soon and keeps doing those hot beats that he does. He does.
All right. In case y'all don't know, he did Issa and Izzo. He did Takeover. He did Guess Who's Back. He did Module. Good to you.
Talib.
He turns the most this out.
It's Talib.
Give it up for my nigga Kanye West. You know what I'm saying? Now, Kanye, y'all also don't know my man got skills. He's a rapper. He's on my new project, so I want him to bust it first. Can we let my man bust it first?
God, so funny.
A lot of love.
Well, because that crowd was so into Talib that he could tell them this guy's good and you're going to pay attention.
It's just crazy why they have, like, beef now. in the late 1900s.
Remember, he's already...
this is the very late... No, this is the early... This is the early...
Millennial?
Early millennium.
Wow. Yeah. It's just he was already paired up with the Rockefeller guys, but he was doing all the production for them, but I don't think nobody took him seriously as a rapper.
They didn't.
So that's what he was... Which is understand. I get it.
I get it too, but I also hate that we do that because it's the same thing about Rock Raider.
No, same thing.
Because you came out as a battle DJ executioner turntablist first, or is where you got your first shine from, that's all you could be.
Right.
So we think Kanye could only be a producer because that's how it started.
Right.
Wait, but hold on. But you're also pointing out that you were one of those people, right? You
said I absolutely was.
Because, I mean, you shit on Kanye.
No, I didn't shit on him.
Kanye begged to get on Sound Bombing. He said, I'll give you an acapella verse. Cypher was like, we good, man.
Okay, let me ask you a question. As a DJ.
Yes, sir.
Sound Bombing is an album on Raucous, right? But it's like a mixtape.
Three.
Right. Me and Mr. Chalk from L.A. All the songs were produced already. They were pressed up on vinyl. So we could actually mix the album on vinyl, right? He comes to the studio on like the last day and was like, yo, can I get on this? I was like, we're done. We're literally mixing it. He goes, I'll rhyme a cappella in the beginning. And I go, I don't know how that would fit. Now I'm like, I wish I would have got him to rhyme a cappella on the beginning.
I know, man.
So we continue on. So you guys do the mixtape together.
Can I just give you some advice.
Yeah.
Whoever comes into your studio saying they want to rhyme, let them rhyme.
That's it.
Maybe record them. At least I would have had it recorded.
Wait, do we have to follow this advice? Like if you and I go out to the concert in a couple of months, Rolling Loud, and someone wants to rap for us backstage,
we
should listen.
What are we doing?
Ugh. Last time I was so mad when we were with Natalie at the last concert. The guy was like, let me rap for you. And I was like, and Natalie's like, no, babe, go ahead. I'll film. I was like, oh.
You love that, huh?
She was like, kick something. This would be great. All right. So he wasn't terrible. He wasn't terrible. Then he got very drunk. He took his shirt off. It was a long day. He was there for a long time. That's the problem. So you put out the Get Well Soon. How well received is that first mixtape? Like, I don't know it very well.
Horrible.
It wasn't.
Let me explain something. Horrible. Nobody wanted it. I even had people wanting to return it. And then, maybe about a month later, I started getting phone calls from all the stores. Yo, you got any more of that Kanye West? We need it.
Really?
Selling out. It's going. It's
why
going.
Are they calling you? Because you presented it.
Me and AG were the ones who
was
literally.
Was it DJ Enough Presents?
No.
Was your name on it?
No, my name wasn't on it. I was just physically helping him get it.
You didn't even put the logo on it?
No, I don't think I did, no.
The heavy hitter logo's not on it?
No.
Mm-mm. Oh, I thought
not until the album. Not until the album. GLC was one of the guys who kind of like, maybe, what's that?
It's the picture of the cover.
Yeah, that's it.
And it doesn't have the logo. It has Kanye's old logo with the Rock logo.
With the Rock logo.
And Get Well Soon and him holding his Rock chain in his hand, wearing the most early 2000s of jeans.
Yeah, those jeans are coming back though.
But then he makes a song called Heavy Hitters for Life. And I'm like,
wait, he made Heavy Hitters for Life before he was a heavy hitter?
Yes. That's the crazy part. So then GLC comes in and presents it. GLC is the other rapper on the song.
Yeah.
And he's from Chicago. It's his homeboy he grew up with. And GL, I don't know, talking to GL, GL had more of street cred to me. Like he was just like the dude. Like you could tell.
You could tell.
Street, right? So I'm listening to him like, okay. And you know, I'm not a tough guy, you know, but this guy's really aggressive. And it's like, we could do this.
He was making a compelling case.
100%.
Okay.
And I hear the record. I'm like, oh, that's dope. So I'm kind of like feeling a little bit. And I'm like, yeah, this could be something. And I'm like, all right, cool. Let's do it. Whatever. And I kind of left it at that. Wasn't really expecting much. And then one of the studio sessions on a playback, this is when like people would present their album. Mm. And it was one of the moments where like Kevin Lyles was there, Michael Kaiser, the industry was there for the first time, but it was big. It felt good to me. And I was invited to listen to the project.
To Kanye's album?
Yeah, Kanye's album. I'm sorry, I'm saying this out of order. But the first gathering was at 4040 for the drop of In the Wire.
Through the Wire.
It was a video, whatever. And in the documentary, they show that I'm there, but you don't see me, but I'm there. I'm there in the space.
You got cut out of the documentary?
I got cut out
of
the documentary.
Who else did that happen to?
A lot of people.
Me.
What part for you?
The part in front of Raucous.
Oh, yeah.
A slice.
Yeah, it's horrible. But anyway, so that happened. And I didn't really pay it too much mind, but when the mixtape started buzzing, I was like, yo, this could be a thing. And then I was his direct go-to to the radio. And this guy started feeding me everything and feeding me and feeding
his
me.
Records or like
his records, everything he produced. Everything. Remember, I'm the new guy at the station, but right. I'm getting all the heat.
Oh.
Yeah. So Kanye starts being your link to getting this new hot shit. As he's blowing up, it's making you look great.
Amazing.
Timing is everything.
Amazing. I'm looking like the kid. And I'm playing like the good, the bad, the ugly.
Yeah.
Oh, and those are
two words.
Those are ill records. And before they come out. And I'm like, woo.
Get them high.
Yeah, all that before everybody.
And so at this point, you now like fully realize how good he is. Like,
yeah.
You're like, this guy's actually really.
No, he's dope. But I'm just so happy in the moment. I'm not securing my bag with the management and the, I could do this for you and have this hit. My lawyer sent to sign this. I'm not doing any of that. I'm just happy.
So how does the logo get on the album then without there being any like real business?
G and Hop were part of his management. Mm-hmm. And then Plain Pat were always trying to show love. You know what I'm saying? Until they were like, look, man, they knew how much I meant to their project. They didn't ask for clearance or anything. I just saw it. I was like,
wow.
Now I'm even hotter.
Yeah. Right. So I guess it's hard.
In my mind, I'm like, I'm hotter again.
Who did the Heavy Hitter logo?
This kid named Joe Buck.
The Heavy Hitter logo is
Joe Buck.
Phenomenal.
Joe Buck did De La Soul's, Chia Lee, a few others. Joe Buck used to work at Cornerstone.
Really?
Rob Stone's company, Cornerstone. Yes.
Yeah, that's the Heavy Hitter logo is iconic. So,
is he still around, Joe Buck?
He's around, but he's not working in that space anymore.
Well, man, he's got something because you're right. That logo with the baseball bat.
It's,
tough, right?
It's like a, I don't know what you call that art. Like, it's like a certain style with the straight lines. You know what I mean? There's like a name for that.
My vision for Heavy Hitters at that time was.
Is he really named Joe Buckingham?
Yes, that's him.
I found him.
Anyway, my vision for the Heavy Hitters logo was never completed. It was supposed to be the greats in sports, right? So it was Mike Tyson, Muhammad Ali, mm-hmm. Babe Ruth, people like that.
Yeah.
And that, to me, those were the original heavy hitters, right?
Right.
So I said, yo, just do that. I said, make a logo after Babe Ruth. And when you're done with that, let's get to Mike Tyson and Muhammad Ali.
So that's supposed to be Babe Ruth, the heavy hitter logo?
Well, not Babe Ruth, but like that's kind of like, you know, the essence of a heavy hitter. Because after a while, it was like, people thought we were all Latin baseball players. I'm like, all these Spanish guys playing baseball. Oh, you guys play baseball? I'm like, no. So I was trying to finish it to complete
team.
The thing.
It's Corona Queen.
Yeah.
Corona Queen softball team, the heavy hitters.
That's what they all thought we were. I got Lobo, got Camilo, DJ Threat, me, L Books, Cast One. Dominicans, Colombians, Puerto Ricans. Imagine that.
All right, you said earlier, kind of in passing, when we brought up Kanye, that he changed twice for you.
Yes.
So when did the first change occur? And also, I have been told before by Cass.
This is 60 Minute shit right now. You hear this guy?
Yeah.
When did Kanye West change for you?
You love when I get too serious.
Yeah,
but Cass did tell me at some point recently, like for a long time, you were really still in touch with him a lot. Like it lasted for a while. So yeah, how did the relationship progress? Let me say
okay, that. Okay, so the first change for me was ultimately when his mom passed away. But even with that, when he was still dating Amber, he would come to our events still. Softball games that we would have.
Remember? You really did have softball games?
Well, yeah, because
you remember that.
You did it to yourself.
No, bro.
You did it to yourself.
Yo, remember DJ Threat passed away and we had a celebrity softball game every year.
And didn't you play the Pimples? Did that ever happen? I made that up.
No, never.
That's
what it was. And I used to have Ebro used to be on our team. Ebro used to play for the heavy hitters and it was dope. It was just a way to kind of like show love. And then
he would come to all that kind of stuff.
He would come to the stuff. Him and Amber would come and they'd be with us and hanging out, regular people.
Yeah.
It was always amazing. And then once he got with Kim, I lost him. It was gone. New management, numbers changed, no more cell phone.
Yeah, he got into the matrix.
Just emails. And then it was weird shit now. So I had like his security guards calling my phone. Kanye's at the hotel. He wants to know if you come by. He has some stuff for you. So I didn't get it all the time, but he just wanted to keep the relationship.
On some level.
He was building his home in California, but he was staying at the Mercer Hotel somewhere downtown or something like that. And he'd be like, yo, I got something special. that the world needs to hear. Come see me. Like, all right, cool.
And what would it be?
Just music, you know, whatever. Just
I want to play
something. It just kept going. It just kept going.
Like, what's something you got early? Like, Watch the Throne or something?
I mean, all that stuff. I was
good
there.
Good music stuff.
I was around all of it, you know, because also this was my beginnings of getting down with Mike Dean. And I didn't know Mike Dean for long, but Mike Dean became a heavy hitter. And I was like, oh, Mike Dean's his guy. Mike Dean's doing a lot of mixes for him and doing a lot of the tech stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. He's a producer, but he's doing a lot of tech stuff too. So Mike Dean became my guy also. Mike Dean was always downtown and always staying at an apartment.
Mike Dean became a heavy hitter?
Yeah. Mike Dean's a heavy hitter too.
What?
Yeah.
What is heavy hitters now?
Yo, bro, we're a serious thing, Pop.
Yo, it's DJ Enough, Kanye West, Mike Dean.
Mike Dean.
Mike Dean, man.
Mike Dean is...
Mike Dean's incredible. Somebody you should have here.
Oh, no, yes, yes.
You should have here.
Like, do you know anyone that knows him that could help us get him?
I actually do.
Because I know, you know what? You know what?
Remember me? I used to DJ for Biggie.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know. I used to DJ for Biggie.
Yo, Mike Dean is phenomenal.
I think Karen Raitt's been helping out Mike too.
100%. Yeah. He's a new artist named Stash.
Yeah, yeah. And Karen Raitt's been helping him out. So we could definitely get him. We should. So Kanye's still, he's still around,
right?
But in a weird, different, getting calls from security guards kind of way.
I would always question him, like, yo, why are you doing that? Why are you doing this? And then he would try to break it down to me, like, I'm not insane. I'm actually very smart. I know what I'm doing. I forgot the references he would use, but it was like somebody who we all thought was insane, but in actuality, they were very smart.
Right.
He was trying to
say crazy like a fox.
That's what he was kind of like doing.
When he would come do things like Summer Jam, did you always sort of remain the point person for Hot when things related to Kanye?
No. After that, it was just however he dealt with it. With the
okay, got it. But would he make sure to get time with you? Like if he came to do Summer Jam?
Like there was one year he performed. He didn't do that well. What was the year that he brought Jay-Z out?
Death of Auto? No, Death.
No, there was a year I DJed for Kanye on Summer Jam. And he had Jay-Z as his guest. And that was the one. But Jay's there for like 2 minutes standing, no music playing.
Yeah, that was the Auto-Tune.
That was the Death of Auto-Tune year. That was the year he battled Swizz Beatz, I think, no?
No, that was a different year.
Different year.
This is when Jay...
Just stood there.
Yeah, stood there and then raised his arm and this side of the crowd made noise and then raised his arm and this side of the crowd made noise.
And they were specifically looking at me like, don't you dare start the music.
Right.
Like it was a cue.
Yeah.
But then the cue passed its point and I'm like, what do I do?
Yeah. Oh, because but this then, is Diamonds Are Forever remix.
Right. And he's standing there.
Yeah.
And
so Jay, this isn't the auto-tune.
And Jay's getting so much love. It's crazy. It's crazy. I'm like, don't you dare play the music enough. Do not cut this.
Yeah. It was a moment, bro.
It was a moment. So I had to hold tight.
And then you eventually bring in Diamonds Are Forever.
Then it goes off and it's crazy.
I got it from here. Yay, damn.
Mm-hmm.
But that was auto-tune also, I think. Same year.
I don't think it's the same year.
All I know is I think they had all white, so maybe all white.
But that shit wasn't. So you were DJing for Kanye?
Yeah, at that time. For that one.
How many times did you DJ for him over the years?
Not a lot. A couple here and there.
Okay.
Not a lot, though.
And when was the last time you had any real interaction with him?
It's been a minute. But my moment of fame was he invited me to the Garden to a concert, and I went. During that night, he gave me, Clark Kent, a bunch of people in the industry flowers on stage, and I thought that was amazing. He wanted me to go to backstage, and I was like, I'm not going backstage. I wasn't a fan of backstage. I always felt like backstage was a mess. Too many security, the dudes, the groupies.
It's annoying.
It's annoying.
It's
not a thing for me.
There's a headache that comes with it, for sure. But that is cool that he did that.
100%.
Does it make you, like watching the doc and then watching everything that's happened since, it must be kind of sad to see the whole thing play out the way it is.
Yeah, it hurts. But I know in his heart he's a good dude, but the choices he's made are just stupid. And I wish somebody was next to him who could tell him what's what.
Was there ever anyone that you saw that could truly get his ear? Like
In the very beginning, I thought like John Monopoly.
Yeah.
And I thought like Don C and Plain Pat, those guys were his day ones. Yeah. Those were his guys.
Is John still around him or no?
No. I don't know. I don't know who's around.
I think
around
he's like
him.
In and out.
Last time I seen John Monopoly, he still had dealings with him.
Yeah, I feel like he brings people in and out though, and it's hard because say no?
I believe it.
But it's not like he is playing Pat with him every day anymore.
You're not ever like pushed all the way out. There's no like, hey, I no longer need your services. Yo, it's just, he fades.
Yo, it's like I saw Cypher for the first time in a long time at the French Montana party.
Oh, yeah. Cypher's big night out.
You know what Cypher tells me? Mm-hmm. He goes, daddy called. Well, you didn't say daddy, but you said something like a flex call.
Yeah, I said something like, yeah.
He wants me to come back outside.
Dad told me to come outside. Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So I was cracking up because I haven't, it was good to see Sy because I haven't seen them in so long.
I know, man.
And then he was just like, yo, how old are you, bro? And I was like, I thought that was weird. I said, why'd you ask me that question? He goes, bro, I looked at a picture the other day and in the picture, everybody's dead. And I was like, oh shit.
Who was in the
Bobby J, Cap.
Bobby J, Big Cap, Frank Jugger.
Yeah, they're all gone. And he was
There's other people too. Like, it's just fucking, it was because I was, when I was packing up my records, from that basement, I was finding all these pictures and stuff. And it's like,
So me and Sife had a moment. It was a weird moment.
Then I go ask him about his son, because his son's a big time producer now. Who,
by the way, DJ Enough's son produced Munch for Ice Spice and works with her on a lot. What does he go by the way? What's his?
Riot.
So when you see Riot as the producer, that's E's kid.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Are you happy for him?
I went to Rolling Loud, the same Rolling Loud you guys went to, and he's performing on stage or walking out, getting ready to come out. I'm getting ready to cry. And I'm like, I can't cry. I'm DJ Enough. And I'm Riot's dad. That's I look like a pussy if I cry. Oh, and I'm Riot. Like, stop. And I'm like, oh, shit.
That's crazy.
But I'm seeing all these kids screaming. I'm like, well, this is nuts. This is my little
guy. Know him?
No, not yet.
But he DJs for her.
No, he's produced her.
But he comes out with her?
Yeah, with that show he did. But yeah, so it's just weird. It's fucking weird.
Somebody showed another picture of my kids and he goes, you're somebody's father?
I know.
What'd you say?
You know why? Because
what did you mean?
You know what it is? Cypher is very funny and is a great DJ and I just love the space that you're in right now. You know what I'm saying?
Thanks, man. Because you're somebody's father.
Yo, did you mean you DJ one time for Danny Boy at Roseland? You don't remember
Danny
that?
Boy.
You don't
know, House of Pain Danny Boy?
No, different Danny Boy. Danny Brown, my bad.
Danny Brown.
I'm bugging, but I got the Danny's fucked up.
I mean, you were close, Danny B.
It was an ASAP Rocky, Danny Brown.
Kendrick.
Yeah, it was a bunch of shit like that. Remember me and you DJ?
Yeah.
It was like a comedy thing. Like me and you were DJing and you were just being funny.
By that time.
And then there was like some funny shit happening. Yeah. I'm like, damn, I could have ended up being doing improv with fucking Sife.
I remember I came into my own personality like towards the end of before I left Hot 97 and I would go to clubs and I would DJ, but I would say funny shit on the mic.
Nah, you had the crowd
in a dance, like a club.
Yeah, I know.
And I remember I went in there once with L Boogs. L Boogs was hosting and I walk in and L Boogs is like, yeah, we about to start the comedy show. And I was like, the fuck are you talking about? Like, I'm a joke, you know what I mean? But it was the first time somebody like filtered it and let me know. And he was like, nah, you always funny when you're in the, and I didn't realize it was a thing. That's where my comedy career came from. Like those moments of like saying, I remember I used to do this club on 23rd. What was that club on 22nd or 23rd and 6th? Oh man, remember it went through the whole block? You could go on into the 21st Street side or the 22nd Street side.
Oh, Le Poulet?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And they had these good Spanish parties there.
Yeah, Le Poulet.
And so I walk in there and that block was notorious for radios being stolen out of cars for some reason.
Is that like, the same block where like Justin had?
Exactly.
Justin was?
Yes, that was the back entrance or something.
So like 20th Street, 19th Street.
Yeah, there. Yeah. And I called the cops and the cops came and they were like, I was like, hey, my radio was stolen. They were like, oh, 22nd Street? I was like, wait, what? Y'all know this is a thing? But I go on stage and I'm like, yo, all my Latinos, Dominicans, Colombians. I said, nobody's allowed to leave while I'm here. I don't want nobody stealing my radio. And like the entire crowd starts laughing like a comedy show. And it's a stupid joke.
Right.
But L Boogs was like, yo, son, you gotta, hey, I mean, that's where like.
Really?
But I don't know. What the fuck am I doing now?
Yeah, you're stuck doing this. Degenerate disgrace.
That same club, I meet Shakira for the first time.
What, that club?
That same club. It was a big Spanish night on Sunday. Yeah. I did it, and I was a Pepsi DJ at the time, and Renee McLean and them would bring in Shakira to meet me.
Wow.
I have no idea who Shakira is, okay? I'm so entrenched into hip-hop And I'm.
You mean you
I'm,
don't know I'm, what she looks like, or you didn't even know who she was?
Had nothing, no clue, nothing.
Wow. Not a shake your bonbon kind of guy.
And my wife laughs at me because you know she's already a big, huge international star. She's just crossing over for the first time here in the States.
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right. I meet the girl. I'm like, hey, how you doing? Whatever. I'm not even excited to meet her. Yeah. Like, whatever. She's in my way. I'm trying to DJ.
Yeah.
And then I see a Pepsi commercial with her the next day, and I'm like, that's the girl from the fucking club. So then I call Renee. Yo, Renee, that was the girl from last night in the club. He goes, yeah, you dickhead. You were fucking rude to her, too. So I'm over here. And the reason why I'm bringing the story up is because that's my wife's favorite artist to this day.
Oh, really?
Favorite.
That's crazy.
Whenever she's in a bad mood, she's like, put Shakira on.
I remember that because Shakira's the one that called Kanye and told him to stop fucking with you. Because of what she did to
him. Was the Summer Jam moment with Ye the only time you ever DJed for Hov? Or were there any others?
No, never.
Never otherwise. Mm. How about this? Do you remember the Jay Biggie relationship? Because Jay told us on One Ep that they talked, like the last year of Biggie's life, basically they talked every day.
I don't know about that. I remember seeing him on the road. Some of the magic moments to me was like, okay, we did, I think, Bam together. So I'm DJing for Big, Irv Gotti's DJing for Jay-Z. And it's just like, those moments are crazy. Like,
Big and Jay-Z show together?
Yeah.
Hold on. There was a
Is that recorded?
Yeah. There was a Big and Jay show at BAM in Brooklyn.
BAM in Brooklyn, 100%.
Were they the headliners?
I don't know. They were the only guys.
They were the only. So Biggie headlined and Jay opened, essentially.
No, it was just Biggie and Jay. That's it.
That's crazy. That's the way it was.
Were you at the Palladium?
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes. That night Biggie got arrested with D-Rock. Six Precinct
with the, NYC. With the Peach. Yeah. No.
It was Angie's party or something, right? Angie was doing Palladium.
No, not that one.
Okay, there was two different times.
Wait, you DJed for Big?
No. I was DJing for Big at that time already.
No, but I'm saying, were you DJing at that Palladium show? Was it a show?
I DJed the party. It was me and Cap were DJing that night.
And no, I think it's a different night.
A different night.
There's a famous picture of Biggie in like a Peach, some kind of linen pants or whatever. But I think it's Jay album release party.
Oh, yeah, you've talked about that before.
And Biggie was there.
Oh, and showed up and rapped there. Yeah. Hold on, a couple things that we didn't ask about. Two pieces of radio. Cass One, you met Cass when he was very young, right? How old was he?
He was just in college or just coming into college. Him and L Boogs were like roommates or something, and they weren't really good friends or something like that. They kind of had beef at college a little bit.
Okay.
And then L Books first was kind of like my guy because he was trying to be on the radio. He was the hosting dude. That was his position. So it was good to have a guy like him around. So that way I could be lazy if I wanted.
If you didn't feel like doing mic work for a night.
Yeah, exactly. Yo, come on, Books. Just crack the mic while I DJ. You know, so he was L Books' guy. He comes to the station. Okay, I'm doing the midnight run at this time. The midnight run was 12 to 4. We only had one stop set of commercials. Okay, so imagine me DJing 2-3 hours straight.
Straight.
How could you smoke enough cigarettes during that time? That was something really challenging. You were going to the bathroom.
You were smoking the bathroom. Maybe in the hallway, whatever it was. So I had to take a shit.
Okay.
All right, it's one of them nights.
Yep.
There was nobody's with me. I'm by myself. I look at Cass One. I say, Bugs. Yo, Bugs, your guy DJs, right? He says, yeah. Come here. I look at him. I say, bro, I'm going to the bathroom. I'm going to start this Diwali rhythm or the Showtime rhythm, whatever it was. I said, please just play a couple of records. And I know he could do it because the reggae sets, he used to do it too.
And it's not that hard. You got to stay in the rhythm.
Stay on the rhythm. It's real simple. He starts, he's literally letting every record play to the end, next record, to the end, next record. He's flipping it over now. And it's the album, the Showtime.
What kind of shit are you taking here?
Bro, I'm in there for a minute. But so Cass is nervous. He's looking for me.
And was when he started the big dog shit
ball. Hold on. And this is the crazy part. Cass doesn't DJ like me, you, or Syfe. DJs hamster style.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was taught.
He DJs backwards.
By mistake.
What we call backwards.
Right. Yeah. Hamster style. So imagine he's doing this on the air.
Right.
And he's not talking. He's just playing the rhythm. After I take a shit, I fall asleep on the couch.
No. What are you talking
Cass
about?
Cass is
What's
looking
happening here?
Cass is looking for me. He's looking for me like, where the fuck
you
is DJ?
You walked to a couch.
I passed the DJ booth. He didn't even see me.
Yeah.
And then in the hallway where the windows are.
Yeah, in the back, yep.
There used to be couches there. Yep. So I just sat down for 2 seconds because I guess whatever shit I took wore me out. So I was like, just for a few minutes. He has a few more records before whatever. But I fell asleep. It might have been 2-3 in the morning. I don't know. I fell asleep.
So he did like an hour?
You know, he just kept going and kept going. And then they found me and they're like, there he goes. Then I woke up. I was like, he sounds good. Don't worry. You got it. And I just let him keep rocking.
And that was
That's crazy.
That's it. And now Cass One is your DJ.
That's crazy. And he Cass is a great DJ too. Yeah, another very clean.
Yeah. He's good. I love Cass because he rocks parties, but he's a nerd.
Oh, my God. He's listening right now.
He gets it.
Cass, what up? He's listening.
Cass Uno. Te quiero. I love him. That's my guy.
Yeah, no, he's the best. And shout outs to our bosses at Hot. I walked in the other day and I saw Rashan. He was walking in listening to this episode from last week.
That's dope.
And then our other boss, Brad, texted me yesterday and was like, yo, you and Cypher are so funny on One Ep. And he goes, man, I didn't know, all of Enough's history. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, this is why we're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So shouts to those guys.
One more Camilo question.
No. Yeah. One of them said, tell us about the day Angie left.
Oh, that hurt.
Oh my
God.
Tough.
Cypher was there too.
No, we weren't there. That was the
afterwards when you did your campaign.
No, I'll tell you my part real quick. I was at Radio City Music Hall doing a sound check because Dave Chappelle was going to do a couple shows.
You know Dave Chappelle?
Dave Chappelle, I used to DJ for
Little
Kim.
That's your guy, man. Yeah.
So this is the first run he did Radio City. He did maybe like 5 shows. Mm-hmm. So I was doing a sound check and Laura Stiles calls me and she goes like frantic. Mm-hmm. And she's leaving. She's quitting. She's going to Power.
She didn't say she was going to Power yet.
She told me.
She told you?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay.
Wait, who? Angie didn't say it?
Angie didn't say to nobody where she was going. She just said she was leaving.
Maybe I mixed it. Maybe whatever. She said, Angie's leaving. Fucking. Then I turn on the radio. Everybody's there. People crying.
Yo, Mary J. Blige is there. Taraji P. Henson's there. It's like, it's nuts.
Guess where I was? At the fucking gym. Laura, I guess, hit me up and was like, told me what was going on. And I've said this before. In the moment, I was pissed because I'm so competitive. And when I knew Dom, I think, hit me on the side, was like, she's going to Power. Mm-hmm. And I hear they're having this tearful goodbye. And obviously, I love Ange to death. But in that moment, I was like, I'm not fucking going to a celebration of someone going to Power. Right? I was tight. How did you handle it?
It kind of hurt because, look, if you think about it, Angie was my A-lister, right? If I always felt like a B-lister, Angie was my connection to the A-listers. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? She was tight with Jay. She was tight with Mary. She was tight with Taraji. She was tight with the actors, the actresses. That's the girl. She's the runaway girl who interviewed all the superstars and celebrities.
Yeah.
Yep.
And she was my home girl from the early days.
Yeah.
And always, you know, she gave me my shot. She helped co-sign me with Tracy to come work at Hot.
For out-of-towners who don't know, by the way, so Angie did Afternoon Drive. And Enough was her DJ. So like they were, they were a tandem on the station and a force for years together.
Yeah, everything that happened since then is trying to copy
what we did, Angie and
Enough doing what was the show called?
Well, when Red did it, was the 5 o'clock free ride. And then I took it back over, it was
Traffic Jam?
Traffic Jam was the morning.
Oh, yeah.
I just called it the Rush Hour.
Yeah, Rush Hour. Yeah, good names. Midnight Run, Rush Hour. You got good names.
I took them off a movie.
Yeah, you still off a movie?
Yeah, Midnight Run was Robert De Niro.
I like that movie.
Yeah,
good names. So
it took you a little while to...
Yeah. Oh, so you were there, literally, because...
I was there.
That was your time slot.
Yeah.
And were you just sort of like...
I was pissed.
Yeah.
I was hurt. Like, what the fuck? Where are you going?
She hadn't given you the heads up before?
No. She couldn't.
No,
she couldn't. She
could, yeah, no, when that kind of deal, you can't.
Because the thing is, I got offered a job at Power 6 months or so before that.
Mm-hmm.
Remember G-Spin?
Yes.
Went from Boston, went to Power, offered me a job. And I said, no.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I could never, I'd be so embarrassed.
Right.
Flex and Angie would look at me like a traitor, a sellout.
Right.
And then Angie was like, I'm out. Bye. Peace, y'all. I was like, what the?
No, and on her way out the door, they threw roses at her feet.
Bro, my exit from Hot 97 was...
Yo, be careful how you say, because my wife really thinks you got kicked out the building.
No, she wasn't.
You know you wasn't kicked out the building.
No, I didn't get kicked out, but the email was unceremonious.
Yes.
it said Cypher Sounds is no longer affiliated with MS Broadcasting. Something like that.
We wish him the best.
We wish him
the best in his future endeavors.
In wrestling,
that happens all the time.
In wrestling, that term, because that's the WWE statement, it's used as a verb. People say he got future endeavors.
That's hilarious. So I get fucking, and I'm like, I cried. Like, I gave this station 17 years, one way or another, blood, sweat, and tears, and they just fucking write me off. Where Angie fucking went to the competition, had a party, balloons, flowers, Ghostface was crying. It was crazy. And she's going to the competition. I was like, this is bullshit, man.
And you know what? Now you look back and you go, I get it. It was Angie. You had to do it.
I ain't mad at her no more.
No.
I was mad in the beginning just because.
Did you have an actual period where you guys weren't close?
She got that bag.
No.
So you never had a period where you were actually mad?
I mean, I was a little mad, upset, but that's my girl. Right. We had so much history with each other. How can I really be mad at her?
Do you guys think that I'm a
bag?
Do you guys think that I'm a loser?
Yes.
That I still, like, I look at everything from a sports standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And to me,
brother, I'm Derek Jeter now.
Exactly. You are Derek Jeter.
100%.
And I believe
I'm the captain, and I'm the guy who's been there the longest now besides Flex.
Oh, that's right. And 100%. And by the way, I believe that before it's all said and done, when Angie truly retires, I believe her last mic time should be on Hot. Like, I still feel that way.
Wow.
I don't know if it would ever happen.
It's definitely not going to happen, bro.
It's not going to happen?
I don't think so.
Because they wouldn't have enough money.
You never know, bro. Back then, who thought she would go to power? So because, we don't know what's going to happen.
And here, I'll make up a scenario. Her podcast, which is obviously doing amazing, which I make fun of because when she announced she was doing it, she was like, I'm so flattered. I started my podcast and everyone likes it so much. And like, out of the gate, the heaviest hitter guests of all time. I'm like, Angie, stop. Of course it's the biggest. So let's say her podcast continues to blow up.
Right.
It ends up being huge.
Right.
She's making bags doing the podcast.
Right.
I could see a world in which the radio part becomes less important to her.
Right.
And it would be like, hey, I'm just going to go do it to do it. You know what I mean? Because certainly if it was for a bag, we may not be the place to come to. You know what I'm saying?
Not for the bag.
No. Not for the bag.
Yeah,
it's
but
never
even
been
if
bag.
It wasn't for the bag, if you listen to a lot of the conversations that she's had.
Oh, really?
The buildings change.
Yeah, of
things
course.
Things have changed. You know, it's not.
What, and
it's,
it, what it's has?
Not, and it has.
Yeah, but Snoop Dogg owns Death Row Records now.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't know what's going to happen, bro.
You never know.
Because she might buy Hot. You know what I mean? Like, Snoop Dogg owns Death Row. Wow, who thought that was going to happen?
Hold on. That came after he was president of Def Jam.
Exactly.
So
he quit his Def Jam job to buy Death Row.
So, yeah, you just don't know. Because, like, in some ways,
anything can happen.
Anything can happen.
Yeah, it is different. But it's different in good ways and in bad ways. You know what I mean? So, I mean, in bad ways and in good ways, I should say.
Right.
And there's some similarities that are still there. And what's really crazy is that I'm now one of the most tenured people there.
At the year when I left, right? How long you been there?
I think I may have passed you already. I got here in 07 and it's 23. I've been there 16 years.
Well, I was there 17.
Oh, I'm catching up. So next year's my year. Yeah, my life is. I better watch out. I better watch out. I know. E, we can't thank you enough, man, for doing this. And I still feel like we didn't get it all because I know you have so many more stories, but we really appreciate you giving us 3 hours of your time, man.
It's all good. Juan Epp for life.
Juan
Epp is life.
Juan Epp is life. I feel.
Oh, you know, when we came back, we called it Juan Epp is dead. And literally every week a rapper was dying.
Oh, man.
And we're like, we got to change the name of the show.
Yeah. 100%.
We can't have it.
Like when we first came back during the pandemic, we're like, yo, let's Juan Epp is dead tribute to
De La.
You know what
yeah,
I mean?
I know.
But
yeah.
The old Juan Epp is dead is the new. And like, we will every week we're like, Black Rob died. DMX died. Yeah. And we were like, so much death.
But by the way, before we leave, Doo-Wop just texted me randomly. He wrote, so LOL, I'm currently watching the Enough episode, which by the way is dope as shit. He said, I feel dizzy trying to keep up with his age timeline. According to him, he was 12 in 1987. And then boom, like magic in 91, he's in his early 20s. And then he wrote, so dope, bro, honored.
Yo, well, how come you didn't text me?
Yo, Doo-Wop got a lot of mention in that damn.
And this one too, it's today too.
Doo-Wop.
It's probably been a Doo-Wop tribute.
Yo,
man.
Doo-Wop, text me.
I think he knows you did these for little kids.
Yeah, find out. You should tell him that. Enough, thank you, man.
No problem.
We appreciate you so much.
Thank you for having me, guys.
The great DJ Enough. And to all of our patrons, we appreciate you. Make sure if you're listening to this, you subscribe to the YouTube because you can watch this entire episode in crispy HD. Well, at least crispier than last week where I was blurry for 30 minutes.
Or never watch it. Just do us a favor. If you love us that much, press subscribe on your fucking bootleg generic email.
Yeah.
Just so we can get some fucking love.
That's exactly right.
That's it. I subscribed.
You did?
Yes, sir.
Wait, to the podcast or the YouTube?
YouTube.
My man.
Yeah.
DJ Enough. Thank you, man.
I didn't pay for it, but it's all good.
I'm cheap.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.